It is Saturday, November 20th. I'm in Lawrence, Kansas, to speak with Libby Phelps about the Westboro Baptist Church. Libby, thanks again for agreeing to the interview. And before I begin, I'd like to say that because the Religion Kansas Project seeks to create a public record, we'd like your permission to make this publicly available. Is that okay?
Yes.
Thanks. To start things off, is there anything you'd like to say?
No.
Okay. Well, I'd like to make it clear that you're no longer a member of Westboro Baptist Church.
Correct.
And I know it's probably a difficult topic for you, but do you think you could share a little bit with us about how you came to that decision to leave?
There were a series of events that happened that made me want to leave. Their views became more extreme, like they started praying for people to die, and they would specifically name people, which I won't tell you.
Okay.
Their names. And they started treating family and other church members badly, including myself. So I didn't think that that was the appropriate place for me to live the rest of my life. So I left.
In what ways would you say that they mistreated other members of your family?
You didn't ask that. Okay, so whenever they thought that somebody was doing something wrong, I would think that there were insignificant issues that they would blow way out of proportion. And then they would just get everybody involved, and they would bring everybody into this room and have you sit at one end of the room, and then they would have people surrounding you, like 30 people, and just saying bad things about you. Like for me, for instance, they would say that I wasn't helping enough, which I was, because I took a full day off of work to go watch their kids, and I did everything they asked me to do, and it was just unreasonable and not fair.
So when you say they accused you of not helping enough, was that in terms of a family life or just?
Well, it certainly wasn't in terms of the picketing, because I went to a lot. Like most of the in-town ones I went to, and a lot of the out-of-town ones,
mm-hmm.
I would go to as many as I could. So not that, but so yeah, I'm assuming it was a family life, but
okay.
I don't know. That's where I didn't know where they were coming from, because it was just like, I'm doing everything I can to help you guys, and
mm-hmm.
you're not grateful or thankful for any of it.
Do you feel it when you were there, it was possible to make a distinction between home and church life? Or, you know, as a member of that family, do you think the two were inseparable?
Yeah, they were inseparable. There wasn't, it was pretty much the same.
And after leaving, have you since joined any other religious organization?
No, I have not. But I did go one time, because my fiance's mom pretty much forced us to go to a Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up at the Westboro Baptist Church, that was one of the worst ones because of the whole pedophile and idolatry and all that stuff. And I ended up crying, and I left the building, and I started crying because I didn't want to go there, and I haven't been back since. So I think it's all of the stuff that I learned from other churches and their beliefs, stuff that I learned when I was in the Westboro Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go to any other one because I just, those were ingrained into us. Like, that's the worst thing to go to. Don't ever go there.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I haven't gone to any other church besides that one.
So when you say it brought you to tears, it was because, as you said, it was that, it was those ideas that you learned as a member of the Westboro Baptist Church about these other faiths. They kept resurfacing and you couldn't shake them?
Yeah,
I
couldn't.
Were you uncomfortable? Or
yeah,
were you scared?
I was uncomfortable. Because so I thought it was a bad place to be.
And I think a lot of people understand that the membership of the Westboro Baptist Church is almost exclusively your family, but I do know of a few individuals who came from outside your family. Can you tell me a little bit about some of those members and how they came to join?
Yep, there were a couple, maybe two or three families that weren't part of the Phelps family,
mm-hmm.
which I'm a part of. So there were the Hockenbergers and the Davises, and okay. The Hockenbachers were there when I was born, like they've been there forever. But then some of them have left, and some of them have been pretty much kicked out too.
Are they a pretty big family?
No, they're, you know, maybe 10, not nearly as big as mine. And then later on, this guy named Steve Drain was doing a documentary on our family, who's from Florida. And so we did the documentary, it's called Fred, I think. I don't know if you've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up moving his family up to Kansas, and now he's a member of the church. So he ended up coming because he did the documentary, and he thought, oh, these guys are right. Mm-hmm. So he comes, and he does a lot of the videography for the church.
Okay. Was he a journalist, or was he a filmmaker?
He was a filmmaker.
Okay. So he was just doing a personal project on them?
Yeah, okay. He was doing a documentary.
Got it. So these other people, you mentioned like this person in the documentary, he came to join on his own accord. Did the Westboro Baptist Church have any recruiting activities?
Not at all.
Okay.
It's not a social club.
As we said, you talked about how home life and family or church life were kind of inseparable. What can you tell me about the day-to-day activities when you were there?
Well, school was very important. We, like everybody, you had to go to college. So, like during the school year, we would get up, go to school, come back, eat a snack, go to the evening pickets, and then come back, do our homework. And, I mean, we watched TV a little bit, and sometimes I would go to my cousin's house and we would play Rock Band or something. And then in the evening, you would have Bible readings.
Mm-hmm.
And once a week, we would all get together it was either my brother's house or my cousin's house, and we would just have like a group Bible reading.
And that was once a week? But every night you had
with your family
on the phone? Can you tell me a little bit about those Bible readings?
We would just read the Bible.
Just read the Bible, talk
about
scripture.
Yeah, and talk about it, yeah.
Okay. Let's see.
Well, like, I can't really go in depth there because, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but, like, with our group that met once a week, we went in chronological order. That's all I can tell you. Yeah, and we would have, like, we would, like, sing a song at the beginning, like a hymn, and then we would have the prayer, which we would be praying for, like, people to die and for God's wrath to come upon everybody. But then we would also pray if, like, somebody was sick or something, we'd be like, we'll pray that you heal our bodies and things like that, and then we would read the Bible.
And you mentioned that if someone was sick, they would pray to heal their bodies. But your family doesn't have any beliefs along the lines of Christian healing or anything like that, do they? I mean,
well,
it would be in addition to whatever the medical treatments, right?
Oh,
yeah.
We would. It's not like, you know how some people don't go to the doctor at all? No, it's not like that.
Okay, just making sure. So these weekly readings are more organized. They had a bit of a structure to them. But they were also separate from, like, weekly services?
Yeah, the church, yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of the same thing, like, you sing a song, have a prayer, and then my grandpa would preach, and then, yeah, that's it.
Do any sermons from your grandfather stand out to you?
Do any sermons? Jeez. I still have a lot of the sermons, because he would type out outlines and give to us. I mean, they were pretty much... This is what he'll do. He'll look at the signs and times, like what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
Like if there is, he's probably preaching about the Supreme Court case now because that's a big issue right now. So he stays on point. Like he reads the newspaper and sees what's going on around him, and then he preaches about the subjects that are going on around that time.
And he'll tie it into the coming of God's wrath.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, you mentioned that education was a big part
mm-hmm.
of your childhood, but no one in your family was homeschooled, correct?
Correct.
So you attended a public school nearby?
Yes.
Can you tell me, what was that like? Did you have any tensions with the student body? And did they know who you were, who your family was?
Yeah, all the students knew who we were. But some people were mean to me. But before we went to school, we were told that we were going to be persecuted and hated and ridiculed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really didn't faze me. It fazed, like my sister, she's pretty sensitive, so she kind of had a little bit of trouble, but I don't really care. My personality is, if you don't like me, that's your problem, not mine. So, I mean, there are people that were, like in high school, there was this one girl, she was really mean. Even when I went to graduate school at KU Med, there was this girl that was really, really mean to me. So I just ignored her.
Can you tell me a little about some of the encounters you had with less friendly people?
Yeah, it wasn't, they didn't say like anything about the picketing.
Mm-hmm.
They would, like the one from when I went to graduate school, we were paired up to share a locker, and she like refused to share a locker with me, and every time we were like in a group, she would not want anything to do with me, and she was just very immature and ridiculous. Was not very professional.
That sounds like
she
awkward.
Asked me. Oh, people, I don't know if this is either because this guy had a crush on me or he didn't like it, but he put gum in my hair. Somebody, I can't remember if I dreamed this or if this really happened, but somebody tripped me because I can't remember it. But I think somebody tripped me.
And this was in high school?
Yeah, and I remember, no, that was in middle school, the tripping and gum thing.
Okay.
That was just some stupid guy. And I remember high school, this girl punched my sister in the face, and then, yeah, and so I had to go, and I stepped in between, my sister's really small compared to me, she's really short and little, so I just stepped in the middle and grabbed the girl's arms and stopped her. Oh, some of the teachers were mean.
Really?
Yes, here's a good one.
Okay.
My seminar teacher, you may tell her her name, let me tell you her name.
You can if you want.
Her name is Lisa Ballin.
Okay.
And so seminar, you can leave and go get help with other classes, which is what I always did because I knew that she didn't like me, so I would get a seminar pass, go to another teacher, and I wasn't even there. So I left one day, and the teacher in front of all the other students said, "I wish I had the nerve to tell her what I thought about her," and this is solely because of the picketing. And then she's just like, "I cannot stand her." And because I lived, and she would give, I was a straight A student, and she gave me a B in seminar. And so it was so messed up.
And she said that after you would get the pass?
She would say it when I was gone, yeah.
How did you hear about it?
Well, some people like me. So a couple of the girls came up and told me that she said that. And so I never brought it up. I didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gave me the B, and that's when I said something, because that's going to ruin my whole life, and that's what she was trying to do. She's trying to ruin my school career. If I give me a B in seminar, come on, straight A student, and give me a B in seminar, that's crazy. And then there was another English teacher too. She did the same kind of thing. But anyways.
Did you ever take the issue up with the university?
Well, this happened in high school.
Oh, this was high school.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. The seminar the English teacher. No, and at the university, they're much more professional there, and they don't know exactly who you are. I never brought my religion to school because that's how we were taught. That's
sure.
how we were raised, because it's inappropriate. It's an inappropriate setting to bring it up. So I didn't have any problems, really, at the university.
Did you take the issue up with the high school then?
Oh, yeah, because I didn't want to be. So,
yeah.
I mean, I waited until they did something that was going to actually affect me, but most of the time I would just ignore them.
Okay. And did you talk to the principal, or can you
yeah.
tell me a little about the process?
Well, I went to my mom and my dad, and they called and talked to the principal.
Okay.
So that's how that happened.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about how you and other members of your family interacted with the general public outside of the school setting and outside of the church
outside.
Activities. I mean,
you had
just like walking down the street, did you ever have any interaction with people or
Like in a bad way?
Or in a good way, yeah.
Well.
There's anything
well, you mean like
you.
If we go to like Mr. Goodson's or something, like we interact with them, we're nice and pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean never had any problems?
No, there's one that time I remember I was going to the Best Buy and I was walking and this guy was leaving it and he goes, there goes a damn Phelps. And I just like smiled because, I mean, people recognize me all the time. Even here in Lawrence, I've been gone for, I think it's a year and 8 months. And people still recognize me here in Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty weird. And where I work at, people still ask me about it too. In fact, I just had this lady the other day. She called to make an appointment and she said, does that Phelps work there? And I was the one who answered the phone. And so I said, well, that's me. And then she goes, well, you know what I'm going to ask you next, don't you? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. Can I please help you? Because I don't bring it up at all.
Right.
And then she goes, how are you affiliated? And then so I was like, affiliated with what? And then she finally came out and said it. And so I said, well, I don't go there anymore. And she still was freaking out. And she was like, well, my family's in the military. And I'm a military wife and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
just can't let it go, huh?
Oh, yeah, she would not drop it. And so she said, do you think we can work this out? And so I just told her, I was like, you're acting very hostile towards me. I don't know if this is going to be a good idea. And then she goes, okay, well, just forget about it. And then 2 hours later, she called me back and she's like, I'm so sorry.
And this was a call at work?
Yeah.
And where do you work?
I am a physical therapist. I work at a local privately owned physical therapy clinic.
Okay. How old were you when you started attending the picketing events with your family?
How old was I when I started? I can't remember exactly. I was 5 or 6.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
And when did they start doing that? Was it when you started?
Yeah, they started when I started.
Okay.
And we started because my family, we've always exercised and tried to eat right and keep fit. And two of my cousins and my grandpa were riding their bikes in Gage Park.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wooded area where homosexuals will go and do nasty stuff. And so they tried to lure two of my cousins they're a year younger than me, a year or two, I can't remember, a year younger. So they tried to lure them like into the woods. Because a lot of times, homosexuals like little boys. Like, that's true. I still believe that, too. Because of that North American Man-Boy Association thing, like, they have exactly. They have associations for that, so you know it's prevalent if it's a national association. So anyway, so they did that, and so when we started, we were just warning people that there were, and we used the word gay at the beginning. Gays in restrooms, watch your kids, or something like that. And so the purpose of, and so what they thought was that all the other religions would come out against this and say, this is wrong, you need to clean up this park. That was the whole reason that they started. And then when everybody turned against them, then they thought, well, this is a really big problem, and there's more to this, and this is going to get really big, which it has. It's blown up.
It really has.
Yeah. It's huge.
Would you say when people reacted negatively to how the Westboro Church started that activity, do you think that's when the it got tied into the end time stuff and the rapture and, you know, God's wrath coming?
I don't think that happened at the very beginning. It was later on when they got, like, more intense and, like, the Lord has come, like, every single day. Whenever my aunt sent out an email, at the end she would say, the Lord is coming. And it was just like every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And that it wasn't like that. It's definitely gotten more extreme.
It has taken on that character.
Yeah.
But when would you say that transition occurred from trying to make people aware of something you saw as a problem to being tied into the
apocalypse? To the end times?
Yeah.
I would say within the last 10, 15 years. So not right at the beginning.
So it took about how long would you say it took for that to take on, that character?
10 or 15 years, the same time period.
Okay. Let's see. From attending those picnic events, are there any encounters or moments that stand out to you the most?
Yes, I remember a couple really well. One time I was in Colorado, and I was a little person. I was like 7 or 8, and there was a big person for a little person, except for me. So I was all by myself, and we had like this big huge banner, because that's when we had first made the website GodHatesFags.com.
Okay.
So like this big huge banner we were holding. I was standing. Everybody was standing behind it, but then there was a big person behind every little person, but I was by myself. And so there was this guy that kept like spitting on me and hitting me on my butt. And
you were only 7?
I was like, yeah, well, maybe I was a little, I was 10, 9, I don't know, I can't remember.
Okay.
Around that age, like probably 8, 9, 10, I don't know, I'm sorry, I can't remember, but I was little. And so there was this guy that kept hitting me, and they just kept picking on me just because, you know, I was the littlest one and I was exposed pretty much. And then when we were walking back towards the car, I had a sign in front of my face too, and then these people knocked me down, so I fell back on the ground, and then these two cops came and picked me up. I remember that. That was a traumatic experience.
It sounds like it for someone that young.
And then more recently, I'm 27 now, so it was probably 23. Because when the picketing, the funeral started,
mm-hmm.
the Patriot Guard, have you heard of them?
Yes, they're the motorcycles.
They have motorcycles and they follow them wherever they go, and they try to block the signs of their flags, and they are violent. Yeah, I just tell the truth about everything. They are violent. They hit me before they come by and they try to knock me down, so try to hit me with their hips, but you just have to stand with a wide base support and they can't knock me down.
So they just try to walk by
and push you over? They'll stand there and then they'll push you back. So, you know when you're playing basketball and you're trying to block somebody out?
Mm-hmm.
They'll do that move too. They'll put their arms out and then try to walk backwards, and then you just have to stick your foot out and don't let them do it. But yeah, so they're very violent. And then they'll stand in front of you and they'll rev their engines and blow their exhaust on you
they'll try to get their bikes in front of your person?
Yeah.
And get that exhaust right in your face?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, they act like they're peaceful and they're not at all. They're probably the worst group that I've ever encountered.
So it's fair to say that your family's had the most trouble
with
them?
Well, I've had those problems with them.
Going back to that that first experience you talked about when you were younger,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned that there was an adult with every child, but except for you.
Yeah.
How far away were you from the other members of
your
family?
Oh, we were all behind a banner, so there were people around me.
Oh, okay.
But the big people were they were just standing right in front of their legs. So there was a big person behind them, and I was by myself. Is that...
Yeah, that
makes
sense.
They were just standing right behind him, so they couldn't get to the little person.
Let's see. Outside of the weekly Bible studies that you mentioned, and the weekly services, of course, with your grandfather, were there any other, I guess you could say, rituals or ceremonies that were important to the church?
It would be during a church service, but when people were baptized, that was a pretty big step in life. And the Lord's Supper, where you have wine and mm-hmm. unleavened bread.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the baptisms?
Yes. You have to go and ask every older male member. You would go and ask them if you would say, I want to be a part of the church. And then they would talk to you a little bit, and then they would be like, oh, yeah, I think you're ready. And then the baptisms aren't just like fingers and water and squirting it on your face. It's mm-hmm. full immersion. So you, during the summertime, there's a swimming pool that you go down into. And then during the winter, there's a baptismal area in the church.
Is the swimming pool outdoors?
Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned that you had to speak with other members. So this was not obviously an infant baptism, though.
Yeah, not. No, I was 16 when I was. Sometimes people are as young as 8. Six, seven, eight, I think.
What sorts of things would you talk about with the other members to determine your readiness?
So they would ask, why do you want to be baptized? And I said that I thought I was one of God's elect, and I was faithful to everything that they preached. And I listened and I understood what they were saying. So, yeah, that. And I remember one of my uncles said that it wasn't a social club. That's all I can remember at this point in time.
So it sounds like when he said it's not a social club, that they expected a real, firm
commitment to it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned that one of the things you said was you felt like you were part of the elect. Is this a central belief to the church?
The church, yeah. There's the elect and the non-elect, and the elect are going to go to heaven, and the non-elect are going to go to hell. And it's not by choice. Like, you can't choose if you're one of God's elect.
Mm-hmm.
God chooses you.
It's preordained.
Yeah.
And what assurances...
Nobody knows for
sure.
Knows. Yeah.
So it's just
you just have to have faith that you are.
Okay. And how does the Westboro Baptist Church support itself financially? What sorts of things do they do to keep it afloat?
We worked. That's it.
That's it?
Yeah. Simple as that.
And can you tell me about some of the relations with other religious groups in the area?
It was not a good relationship. I remember when we were kind of first starting, and there was this Episcopal church in Topeka, and they would have their own signs that would say, like God is love, and they would try to block our signs and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So that's what I still think. I still believe in the First Amendment, so that's why everybody's still... they like how I'll still stick up for them, but I'll stick up for anyone. I believe in the First Amendment, right? They have the right to do that. I don't think anybody should block them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's fair. But that church I was talking about, they went and they got a restraining order type thing against them. You had to be like across the street or something during a service. You couldn't be on the same side of the street, so there was a limit on how close you could be.
Hmm.
So they tried to get us to stop, pretty much. That's what they did.
Were there any religious organization at all that you guys had an amicable relationship with?
Not really. Sometimes there was a church from some other state, and they had a lot of the same views, but then they would allow divorce in their church.
Okay.
There would always be one issue that they didn't
mm-hmm.
share the same belief, and so they would just stop talking to them.
So one was enough?
Yeah.
Let's see. How do you see the future of the Westboro Baptist Church in the long haul?
Well, I think that the U.S. Supreme Court case that is going on right now, that was, right before I left, that was the ultimate thing. Like, they said this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When it was a soldier's dad who sued some of the church members who were there for picketing his son's funeral.
Right.
And the church followed all the rules of the state that they were at. They, 200 feet away, or I don't know how many feet away they were supposed to be, they left at the time they were supposed to,
mm-hmm.
and then this guy sued them, and then they won, And then the church appealed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so right before I left, they said, what's going to happen here is this is going to be huge. It's going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court is going to have to denounce the Westboro Baptist Church. And as a result, it's pretty much the whole of the United States is denouncing them. And that's what they want. Because then they think that the Lord will come soon after that happens.
So they see a ruling, a negative ruling against them as a sign of the impending end of times.
Yes.
Like, it's very impending. Like.
Yeah. That was a big thing. I mean, they probably changed their, I mean, they may have changed and gone to something bigger. Like, oh no, now the world court has to say. It's just, they're never content. That was another thing that made me leave. It's just they're never content with anything. They always have to, you know, find someone to, like, just pretty much harass. They'll be in a church and they just, like, fly-spec everything. It's ridiculous.
What do you think they would say if the Supreme Court rules in their favor?
They would probably think that was a good thing. They'd be like, well, they just had to follow the law. That's probably what they would say. Because as a whole, they think that everybody hates them. Everybody wants to, they need to be ridiculed and hated in order to think that they're doing something right.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the Westboro Baptist Church hopes to accomplish by organizing these picketing events and, you know, instigating people in the manner that they do?
They want everybody in the United States, they want everybody in the world to see the message, so that everybody can reject the message and they are therefore condemned. They've condemned themselves because they rejected their message. They've condemned themselves to hell.
Would it be fair to say that that condemnation would be reassurance to them as part of the elect?
Yeah.
So that's what they're going for? They're looking for the ultimate reassurance?
Yes.
You know, we've talked a lot throughout the interview about the apocalyptic tone that a lot of the messages have taken on. Would it be fair to say that they're looking to instigate the end of times through that condemnation or that rejection of their message?
No. God's in control of everything. That's what they think. But they're just looking at the times and seeing that they think that these are the end times just because of what's going on around them, but they're not trying. I mean, they pray that the time comes quicker, but they know ultimately that they're not in control.
Okay. We talked before about how since leaving the Westboro Baptist Church you have not affiliated yourself with any other religious organization.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you would describe your beliefs now?
Yeah. I still believe in a lot of the moral issues that were instilled in me as a child. I still think that homosexuality is wrong. I still think abortion is wrong. I don't believe in divorce. But I'm not... If somebody asks me that, I'll tell them I don't just go out and say, I don't believe in abortion. If somebody asks me, like, no, it's, and I'll stand firm in my beliefs. And another thing I wanted to tell you was right before, like the day I left, my aunt called me at Cheryl. She's the main one. Mm-hmm. She called me at 6:00 in the morning, and I seriously wasn't even thinking about leaving. Just all of a sudden happened like that. But she called me, and she's my older sister had gone a long time ago when I was fairly young. I remember it, but it wasn't that big of a deal to me. And so my aunt started talking about her and saying how she's a drug addict now and an alcoholic, and then she was talking to me and she said, you're going to turn into that, and pretty much you're going to be a low life and suck at life.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And this was after you left?
This was the day that I left, like, people just kept calling me, and I was just like, I cannot take this anymore. And it was all of a sudden. It wasn't like I had been thinking about it and then planning it and doing it. It was in the middle of the day. I was at work. I rescheduled to cut. Like, there were two patients I had to reschedule for later in the day. And then I just, like, I have to get out of here. So I went back, my coworker and I got a couple other people, and we filled up like a couple cars, and then I left. And a few months later, I bought this house. And I am not a drug addict or an alcoholic at all. I hate that.
I didn't think you were.
I know, but...
What do you think that your family... I mean, at that point, did they kind of resign themselves to the fact that you were leaving? Or did they think that by being so harsh that they might be able to draw you back in?
No. Once you leave, they act like you're dead. They, you're not in existence. You don't get to talk to them anymore. It's, you're dead to them. But another thing they did, though, was... So I left on a Friday, and then the next Monday, they drove out to... I work like 45 miles away from Topeka. They drove out there and they stole my car because my, we helped each other a lot. Like financially, if you needed money, they would loan it to you, and then instead of going to a bank, you would pay them back, but it wouldn't, you wouldn't have any interest.
Okay.
So I had just started work, just graduated, just started working, and I needed a better car because I was commuting 45 minutes a day. And so my mom and my sister loaned me some money. So I emailed my mom, like, right when I got to the computer, and I said, I was just like, very professional, I'm trying to keep emotions out, and I said, I'll transfer, we had a joint account, so I was like, I'll transfer all the money in there until I pay you back. And then so my aunt takes it over, like she always does, because she can't mind her own business, and said, your mom and your dad and your sister want nothing to do with you. And then she pretty much blackmailed me into getting my car back. So she was like, do this, 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 give them the money, and then I'll give you your car back. So I did everything, and it was all something I needed to do and related to the car issue, but I did everything, and I did it within a day, because I called people, and I told them what was going on, and a lot of people felt sorry for me, so things that would have taken a few days to accomplish, they got done like that for me, even though they weren't supposed to sometimes. So I got it all taken care of, and I emailed her back, and I said, okay, it's done, give me, and then she was like, I need proof. So I was like, give me your fax number. She wouldn't give me her fax number. She was like, you need to come here and get it. She was trying to get me back into the house, which I was like, I'm not going over there. So I had to call the cops because she would not give me my car back. And because I even paid them all the money too, so I'm just like, okay, you're sitting over there with my car and all the money. It's not fair. So... I didn't want to, but it was just like, there was nothing else I could do. So I called the cops, and then went over, and she lied. That's why every time I start feeling bad and missing my family, every one of them lied, and it made me question how honest and hardworking they were. And that's when I grew up, that was one of the main traits that I thought my family possessed, and they lied, they're not honest. Told a bold-faced lie to the cops. She said she didn't know where the car was, even though I showed them all the emails of her saying...
It was at their residence?
Yeah. Or it may not have been there, but I showed them the emails of her saying, do this, and then I'll give you your car.
Okay.
And then she's acting like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. And so she just lied.
So were the cops then able to find out where the car was?
Because she lied, so they left, and then... They were going to get a search warrant the next day, because if there's anything to do with my family, things that would take, you know, a few days go like that.
And so, like butter, huh?
Yeah. So the cop was like, we'll have a search warrant tomorrow and we'll get it. But that night, I guess my aunt called the cops and then let them fax the stuff over, and then they parked the car, because the place that I work at has a clinic in Topeka, so they parked right there. So then I had to get someone to drive me out again at 10 o'clock at night. They didn't even fill up the gas tank either. They drove all the way and didn't fill it up. Wow. It's okay, though.
That's quite a story.
I know.